Packers fans. Is it a bad morning? Welcome to Railbird Central, regardless. I'm your host, Brian Kirvu. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden, along with Alex Talich. We're talking some Packers football. We're recapping a Packers loss, 36-16 in the season opener against the defending Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks. To help us break down this loss, to analyze it, we have joining us for his monthly engagement, the first Friday of every month here at Railbird Central, Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog. Scott, are you ready to jump off a ledge?
I'm not there, Brian. I think there you know, based on what I saw on Twitter, it looked like there's a lot of people that are. I'm not one of them, though. Good to be speaking with you again, man.
That's good. Well, let's get right to it here. I mean, there's no shortage of things to talk about after this loss. The day after the game, what are your feelings about the state of the Green Bay Packers as it currently stands after one game?
Well, the number one thing I'm looking forward to hearing is what happened with Brian Bulaga. I think that the turning point of the game is undoubtedly Bulaga's injury. And you know, I thought Sherrod did decent to close the first half. But, you know, in the second half, it was the number one sore spot that I took in was, you know, the game changed on the fourth and five where Sherrod got beat on, and then the safety immediately after, combining with the 15-yard penalty, and the next thing you know, the Seahawks have a short field, and the game is out of reach. But so that's the number one thing that I'm going to be looking for, and is the most concerning piece for me is what's the status of Brian Bulaga's injury for the long haul.
I heard on ESPN this morning, listening to Mike and Mike, and they said the Packers were optimistic about Brian Bulaga's injury, and I don't know where that's coming from. I didn't have an opportunity yet to listen to Mike McCarthy's press conference, whether that's coming from him or it's coming from some source. I'm not sure. But I mean, kind of on a related note, how do you feel about the long-term prospects, regardless of Brian Bulaga's injury here, about Derek Sherrod? I mean, here's a guy I can, you know, play devil's advocate. I mean, he didn't play well, but I could play devil's advocate and say, well, it was his very first game, you know, regular season game back from his injury, in which he played an extended amount of time. He was taking on two darn good defensive linemen against the Seahawks in their home stadium. Is there any reason to believe Derek Sherrod can turn things around?
It's a great way to look at it, Brian. It depends on what we're looking to accomplish here as a football organization, in my opinion. If we're looking to be a 10-6 team that hosts a wild card game with a 50% chance of winning it, then Sherrod might be good enough. But if we're looking to be a Super Bowl contender and a team that is putting itself in position to make a deep run into the playoffs, and to be able to go nose to nose and toes to toes with the brute strength of both the Seahawks and the 49ers, you have to be physical enough. And clearly we didn't see that from Sherrod. And I think in the second preseason game, we saw a lot of struggles from him as well. And I can agree in being sympathetic to, you know, this was really his first full-fledged action in years. It depends on what the mission is and what the Packers are looking to accomplish here in 2014. And, to touch on that Bulaga with the point, you know, the Raji injury was not supposedly thought to be very serious at first as well. So that's what still has me nipping at my fingernails, wondering what the status is there. But, when you really look at this game and you take a step back and you really digest what we saw, I think that Guyon's performance was the most concerning piece of the game. And you know, Brian, if you look at, you know, what changed year over year, and I was really excited for Guyon. I thought that he was going to be in an under discussed signing, is I think the way I was describing it. And but he just got pushed around, and then you merge that with, you know, the Brad Jones performance, which you could go on at length with, and you know, you see, you know, AJ Hawk and Morgan Burnett bumping into one another, and as they're trying to dance with Percy Harvin, it just looked like the middle of our defense looked awfully scary once again. And that's the piece that we need to get figured out.
So what's your take on, you know, the Packers defensive line in particular? They've gone smaller from last year. You know, gone are Johnny Jolly and Ryan Pickett. And you know, in comes Guyon, and you know, he's about 310, 315 pounds. So they've gotten smaller, and you know, even I don't think Mike Daniels and Dayton Jones, while maybe not terrible, they didn't look the greatest against the run either. Where do the Packers go from here to fix these deficiencies?
Well, you know, I think first and foremost, you know, take one step minutely back. It seemed like early in the game, didn't it appear like they were playing more of a 4-3 defense with almost Clay Matthews playing his father's spot on the field? Did you catch that as well?
It was interesting to see Clay Matthews get line up in, you know, as a blitzing middle linebacker a few times, but also just off the line of scrimmage, kind of in an outside, you know, a true 3-4-3 outside linebacker position a handful of times. Yeah, they did do that.
I'd like to see that a little bit more. And I think that, you know, I thought that the Packers offered confusion. And then for some reason, it appeared to my eye, maybe I had too much Pliny the Elder, but it appeared to my eye that they got away from that a little bit, and they went really small and thin at the line, and Guyon was getting pushed around by Unger, who's a Pro Bowl safety in his own right, and Sweezy would come and whack him from the backside, and the next thing we knew, Lynch was cutting back and grabbing chunks of yardage. So maybe the solution is to see more of that 4-3 defense, and having, I liked when I saw Peppers and Matthews coming from the same side. There seemed to be the most zest and pizzazz to the defense at that stage. But you know, so that's one thing I'd like to see. And then additionally, in Mike Daniels has Pro Bowl potential, and you know, I think he'll be the first person to look himself in the eye and say that wasn't his best performance. Mike Daniels is a terrific football player. And yesterday wasn't his best game. I really expected him to win the leverage war against James Carpenter, and I thought Carpenter really played well yesterday. And you know, I imagine that moving forward, you know, Daniels is going to have much better games than he did yesterday, and he's going to be making multiple plays a game that could potentially be game-changing plays.
Yeah.
So that's why I feel I'm less worried maybe than some other people are at this stage.
Yeah, Mike Daniels is not the problem. Went and checked the grades at Pro Football Focus. Mike Daniels received the second highest grade of anybody on the Packers defense. And yeah, he got pushed out of the way a few times, but he also was one of the few that got penetration. I'm not worried about Mike Daniels so much, but they do need to, you know, do something at nose tackle, whether it's going to Mike Pinnell or you're giving a call to Johnny Jolly or Ryan Pickett, I'm not sure. But if we move to the offensive side of the football here, Scott, Packers, you know, how disappointed were you that, you know, this is a team that's supposed to have a high-powered offense with Aaron Rodgers at the helm, and they weren't able to get anything going consistently?
I didn't look at the box score, but I'm baffled that I thought I heard that the Seahawks ran for more yards than the Packers threw for. And I think, you know, I always say that an aggressive Mike McCarthy is a good thing. And when you would just straight out say to yourself that we're not going to attack Richard Sherman once. And, you know, the game ends late last night. This is an early call today, so I didn't get a chance to really look at anything on repeat. But for my eye, the 3rd-and-5 play with roughly 7.5 minutes left in the third quarter, when Rodgers rolled right and threw across his body to Jordy Nelson. And how can you be critical of Aaron Rodgers? He's as good as anybody in the league. But what I'm saying is, I almost wonder if he was trained prior to the game to not look at Sherman's side, because if you go back at it, I believe I saw Davante Adams or Adams streaking down the right side of the field
He
for a
did.
touchdown.
He did. Yes.
It was a touchdown, and then on the next play, if you watch the next play, and it was at the top of the screen, so it was clear in view for us on the couch, right? So easy for us to say. But Adams looked like he was right across the first down marker, wide open, and we didn't look. And when you go into the and I realize the league is with the new rules has changed into more of a matchup league, and somewhat similar to basketball than it ever was previously. And I thought the Packers did a good job of maximizing their matchups with Cobb and Nelson. But I don't believe that you can go into a game and have an intent to establish rhythm, but being able to do it with one side of the field, just especially when you look at the safety play that the Seahawks have. And for me, that was the most disappointing thing, is that we really allowed Sherman to yawn his way through the night without ever testing him. And yes, he's an elite cornerback in the league, but at some point, you got to see if he's still awake, I believe. And did you feel like they needed to attack that side of the field at all, or were you comfortable in our approach?
I'm right there with you. I mean, obviously, you stay away from Richard Sherman more than you go at him. But yeah, to simply stay away from him 100%, and simply go to the left side of the field only. They obviously had the game plan going in. They know Richard Sherman's going to be over to the right side of the field. So what they do is they line up Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb the majority of the time, their best playmakers, to the left side of the field, and have Jarrett Boykin across from Richard Sherman. I think that's smart, again, the majority of time, but you simply never, say, we're not going to test that side of the field. Well, you're making it awful easy on the Seattle Seahawks to defend you. And yeah, that play where Davante Adams was streaking down the right sideline, he was wide open. I will say this, I think Rodgers was under pressure, and the time it would have taken for him to move his eyes to find Adams, by the point he would have found Adams, he may have been sacked, although he was wide open, and it was disappointing. But okay, we broke down the passing game here. The running game it was average. I'm not sure it's the fault of Eddie Lacy or James Starks. Let me ask you this. James, we talk about the Brian Bulaga injury. Eddie Lacy comes out of the game with a concussion. Are you injured about Eddie Lacy's second concussion in 2 years?
I'm not overwhelmingly worried about that. At this stage, but I will say, and I don't have stats to back me up, but it seemed like also at post the Bulaga injury, that's when our run game just completely died. And it felt like early in the game, we were able to lean on the Seahawks defensive line just a bit to slow down the pass rush, continue to stretch the throats of that Seahawks defense, or 12th man, I should say. And, it felt like we were going to continue to lean on them and get a push and wear on them to open up some things, for us in the second half. And, post the injury, we just had no semblance of a running game at all until the final touchdown drive, when the game was, essentially out of hand at that point. But, in my opinion, I thought early in the game, the Seahawks aren't a team you're going to go run for 150 yards on. But if you're eating up clock and you rush for, 80 to 100 and, 10 yards on them, I think that could be if you have a Lacy running for 80 to 110 yards, I'm saying, that's a very productive day. And early in the game, I thought that that there were a lot of things to offer hope for. And, you know, post the Blague injury, I just didn't, I don't, again, I don't know what the stats were when he was on the field and when he wasn't, but it sure seemed like when Blague went off the field that our running game, it disappeared. And, you know, I don't know if you've heard anything or you have anything to add to that, but that was certainly the most striking thing from my eye with regards to the running game.
I do tend to agree with, you know, after the Blague injury, things kind of, you know, went downhill from there, with the exception of maybe some fourth quarter, you know, runs or in which, you know, Seattle by then was, you know, just trying to prevent the big play. I will say this about the Packers run game. Whereas you saw in seasons past in the Mike McCarthy era, in the pre-Eddie Lacy era, the Packers abandon the run in the second half as they attempt to play catch-up when they're behind. At least you know that's not happening as long as Eddie Lacy is suited up and is out on the field. They're not afraid to give him the ball because they know he's reliable and he will get yards. Maybe not every carry, but they weren't afraid even down at halftime to rush the football at the beginning of the third quarter. They didn't abandon it.
We have a team with a really strong, strong offensive line. I mean, Lindsley we played great. And that was exciting. And I think with Lang and Sitton, I mean, those guys can play football and they'll punch anybody in the mouth. And Bakhtiari is you know, continuing to progress and to blossom into a real solid left tackle. And, you know, I think the heart of our team really, it's changing to be a brute force running attack with the elite arm in the NFL. And you know, that's why I am not here on a Monday morning, you know, standing near the cliff and saying that the 2014 season is over. Definitely have some things to figure out, but you know, it's a good point, Brian. We are committed to being a running team and realizing that it's going to open up so much more for Aaron Rodgers as teams watch film and study film and see that you know, we are committed to being a running organization this year, and it's going to open up play action pass and that famed rollout to the right deep ball to Nelson that we've seen over the years. You know, that all that stuff is going to open up. Is it's going to be really tough to consistently, you know, to consistently just play us with, you know, six or seven men in the box. You're going to have to bring down that safety to help out. More teams than not, anyway, will need to bring in that safety into the box, and that's just only going to open up the deep ball for Rodgers as the season goes along.
We're talking to Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Friday morning, wrapping up a Packers loss to the Seahawks. Right now, we're going to do a little back and forth here, and maybe we'll get 1 minute each here, Scott. But Scott is going to give his fixes. He's going to put on his coach's hat and give the fixes, the things that went wrong for the Packers and need to be remedied. And me, on the other hand, I'm going to counter with some of the silver linings we saw last night. Maybe there weren't a lot of them, but there were some good ones. And Scott, if you could just, I'll start with you here. You know, what are your remedies for the Packers? What needs fixing?
Well, the number one thing I would say is let's insert Lattimore at inside linebacker. And see what he can bring to the table there. When he was able to maintain his weight last year, I really thought he brought an aggressiveness and a certain tenacity to the defense. And I like Brad Jones against the mediocre teams of the NFL. But when we have to go against the big, when he has to go against the big boys, you know, the results
Brad
have been
Jones
very.
Against the mediocre team. Yeah, go ahead.
It's when he's had to go against the big boys, the results have been very continuous, continuously less than average, and that would be my first thing that I would like to see is more speed, more athleticism with Jamari Lattimore.
Yeah, I have to agree. Brad Jones just did not look athletic out there. He looked a step behind all the time. My silver lining, the top one, which Scott actually alluded to earlier, Corey Linsley, the play of the Packers rookie center, for all the attention he got coming into the game, not getting a whole lot of preseason work, definitely not getting any time with Aaron Rodgers. He held down the fort. There were no turnovers. There was the one moment where Aaron Rodgers kind of got him in his face as the clock was wearing down. But I think that was, as I said on the Chips report at Cheesehead TV, kind of a mount made out of a molehill. There's a lot to like about this rookie center. I think he definitely is strong and can get some push in the run game. Works well with Josh Sitton and TJ Lang. But he is your number one silver lining and a reason to be optimistic about this team. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, great point, Brian. Linsley might end up being one of the gems of the draft. There's a lot of people that are going to say that, Clinton Dix had a terrible game. I disagree. Yes, I would like to see him make that tackle on Lockett. He looked like he got caught on his heels there. Missed a tackle or two against Marshawn Lynch, but a lot of people are going to do that, and I'm not going to hold it against him, as I think he makes that play against the majority of the backs in the NFL. Haha, Clinton Dix brought a speed to that defense, and I think we saw that on the play where he chased down Russell Wilson. I don't know if they credited him with a sack there; they might have, but I really liked that, and I liked his. The way he's attacking the football, running forward when the ball's in front of him, I feel that he brought a certain fire to the and a new energy that that I really liked. And additionally, I think he's the guy that recovered the fumble. And man, that might be one more turnover that we had out of the safety than we had all of last year. Wish he would have came down with the interception deep down the sideline. Didn't make that play, but he was in position. Last year, I'm not sure what would have happened there, but I thought that there were a lot of things to look forward to in the future of Haha Clinton Dix, and would like to see him as a permanent fixture in the secondary.
So I mean, what do you do? Is Morgan Burnett the guy who's out? Is that your remedy?
I think I brought this up last the last time we spoke. When you put Micah Hyde and Haha Clinton Dix on the field at the same time. I can't guarantee more turnovers, but we're not getting them anyways. What we will do is we'll see better tackling, and we'll see guys that really understand angles and understand how to play football. And that's that in my opinion, if I'm Dom Capers, that is what I'm looking at as my starting safeties are Micah Hyde and Haha Clinton Dix.
Yeah, I agree that he did miss the two tackles, but Clinton Dix had a sack, a fumble recovery, and a batted down pass. I think there's a lot to be optimistic about with Haha Clinton Dix. I agree. Another silver lining for me is the pass defense as a whole, especially containing the Packers, the Seahawks' deep passing game. Both Tremont Williams and Sam Shields played pretty well. Shields, of course, kind of a culprit along with Clinton Dix on the one, big passing play the Seahawks got. But they kept things in front of them for the most part. I think if the Packers continue to get good play from their secondary here as they got Thursday night, they're going to be in pretty good shape. Sam Shields even came up with that one big tackle. I think it was on a third down that forced a punt. Just good play from the Packers cornerbacks. Kind of I don't know if it was unexpected, but you expected the big plays to come from Julius Peppers and Clay Matthews, not Tremont Williams and Sam Shields. So I guess that was my silver lining. And Scott, I know I got to let you go soon. Do you got one more remedy, one more fix for me before we let you go?
Absolutely. I'd go back to staying close to that 4-3. And if we aren't going to be calling easy again for us to say as we're sitting on the couch, but if we're not going to be calling a Johnny Jolly or a Ryan Pickett to beef up that front, I'd like to see more of the 4-3. And I thought that early in the game, it really impressed me. And I was jumping through my brother's ear with excitement about it. And I thought there was a newness and a freshness, and it gave a different look. And I felt like we were plugging the line pretty well and getting enough of a push there that it was forcing teams to have to adjust to us, or the Seahawks to have to adjust to us. And I would encourage more of that, as it hides Clay. And when he's a freelancer, I think that's sometimes when he can be at his best. And so that's something that I'd like to continue to see more of. I really enjoyed seeing Peppers in a Packer uniform. And even though he didn't have that flashy high impact play, there were a couple of times where he bursted through, and he got his hands on Wilson. Of course, he had the sack that was shared with Matthews that got negated by the penalty by Brad Jones. But there was another time where he sliced through. I think he got past Britt and had his hands on Russell Wilson's feet, and really forced an incompletion there that in past years we just haven't seen. I think that our best defense is if we could get Perry and Neal and Daniels and Peppers all going towards the quarterback, with Hyde occasionally doing the same thing, and then Matthews, of course, being the hawk that's constantly surveying for his prey. I think that that could still bode to be a real strong defense for the Green Bay Packers this year.
Scott, I appreciate you joining us on the show this morning. Better times are ahead for this Packers team. I know that, and I think you'd agree. So we'll talk to you next month, the first Friday of every month, and hopefully we'll be talking about a Packers win.
Cheers to you, Brian. Go Pack, go.
All right, take care. Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog joining us for his weekly, pardon me, monthly engagement, first Friday of every month here at Cheesehead TV. I'll kind of continue here. Two final thoughts from me from this game, as had to let Scott go, but my silver lining here, my last one, and it's a minor one, but the play of Nick Perry came as a pleasant surprise in the second half of the game last night. He kind of didn't, I'm not sure if he played at all in the first half. On the defensive side of the football, he very well may have on special teams, but it seemed as if Nick Perry got time as it appeared maybe the Packers were trying to avoid Julius Peppers wearing down, and they took him out of the game a little bit in the second half, and that seemed to be when Nick Perry was getting his playing time. But I think he only played about 11 snaps, but boy, he looked good out there. He had that batted pass in the red zone when the Seahawks were in the red zone. He had a nice stuff of a run. I thought, here for a guy who's been, rather maligned and gotten a lot of criticism for being a first-round draft choice that hasn't produced, there were some things to like about what Nick Perry provided last night. And he's trending upward, at least. It's got to be for more than 11 plays. We're, of course, talking about a small sample size. But there's one small silver lining from last night. And one final thought here that's not exactly a silver lining or anything, but kind of piggybacking on what Scott had to say. I do wonder, after seeing last night's game and how frequently the Packers kind of actually played with a four-man defensive line, whether we've seen this is the last year of the 3-4 in Green Bay, and whether they'll be moving to a 4-3 going forward after this, just because that seems to be the way their personnel is currently set up, especially in light of the injury to BJ Raji. Of course, even in a 4-3, you still do need a big defensive lineman out there. And who knows, maybe that guy is Mike Pinnell. I think you got to, Latroy Guyon's performance was disappointing last night. And I think you got to find a way at least to get Mike Pinnell active. And I'm not sure you cut LaTroy Guyon, but you know, I think you got to make the rookie was inactive. The Packers made a choice before the game, making out of their seven inactives, I think five of them were rookies. And certainly you understand that Dmitri Goodson and Carl Bradford were among those, you know, on the inactive list. But I don't know how long the Packers can keep guys like Mike Pinnell, Jayrone Elliott, and Jeff Janis inactive. Those guys are young, they're healthy, and I think they're playmakers. And you know, I understand the Packers thinking they didn't want any rookie mistakes during this game. They went with the experienced guys who already know the schemes and systems and the guys who have been around the block before. Basically it was a short week of work compared to the rest of the NFL they played their, they're getting 10 days to prepare their season opener. The Packers only getting a week. Kind of feeling that, you know, bringing these rookies up to speed and getting them, you know, ready to play right away was probably not feasible. So that's why I think you sat those guys down. But boy, I don't think you can have those three guys inactive for much longer. I think you got to get Pinnell in there as maybe a stout force on the defensive line. I'm interested to see how he does. You know, he got a lot of playing time against backups in the preseason, and maybe it'll be different when he's facing guys like Max Unger, and maybe he suffers the same fate as LaTroy Guyon. But still, LaTroy Guyon, the word's out. He didn't have good showing last night. Packers got to do something. I think, you know, the Packers went with it. It came down to either Andy Malumba or Jayrone Elliott being inactive at the outside linebacker position. I think, you know, Jayrone Elliott, he's got the higher ceiling. I think you, as soon as you start finding how he can contribute on special teams, you start to make him inactive ahead of Malumba. And then I think, you know, Jeff Janis just has, even though he's raw, even though he's behind the curve, you got to get him involved in some way. And perhaps the way you start getting Jeff Janis involved is on kick returns. Saw a rather disappointing performance from DeJuan Harris last night. And maybe it's just, you know, less a factor of DeJuan Harris not having it at kick returner than it is, you know, simply being smart and probably should have taken a knee on his two attempts in the first half that he couldn't even get out to the 20. But maybe that's how you get, you know, Jeff Janis involved as well. So there you go. There's your thoughts on the Packers' season opening loss to the Seattle Seahawks. Better times are ahead, folks. It's tough to lose this, you know, high profile game, nationally televised NFL kickoff game that gets so much attention, not just in Green Bay, but nationwide. It's disappointing. I get that. But there's no reason this Packers team can't, you know, win a division championship at the very least. My prediction still hasn't changed in that I still think this team can, you know, win 11 games this year. I'm not sure they're ever going to be able to catch up to the Seahawks, but, you know, My mind might change in 4 months. It's a long season. It's a long season, and better times are ahead, including a game at home at Lambeau Field next game against the New York Jets. That could very much be one of the remedies the Packers are looking for. Just simply getting a home game against a team that's not as good as the Seahawks, to say the least. That'll do it for Railbird Central this week. And by the way, this is the last episode of Railbird Central for like 2 weeks or so. As I go on vacation, there will be no Railbird Central till I think it's September. I even forget the date off the top of my head. We'll be back, I think, previewing the Lions game. The Friday before the Lions game is the next time we'll have an episode. So look forward to seeing you then. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, on behalf of Alex Talich, on behalf of everyone at Cheesehead TV, and I want to thank Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog for joining us here at Railbird Central. We'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Colliding by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack Go.